Our last case for oral argument this morning is 823-0261, East Phillips Neighborhood Institute versus the City of Minneapolis et al. As all parties are aware, this is a Zoom oral argument. The matter will be available to be listened to tomorrow on our website, but our rules prohibit anyone from doing their own recordings. So for everyone who is watching this, not on site, please keep that in mind. That it is strictly prohibited to record the Court of Appeals when we make our own recordings. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, the respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument, and then finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So counsel for the appellants, whenever you're ready, just tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please, and you may begin.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Miles Ringsred. I represent Appellants East Phillips Neighborhood Institute, who I'll be referring to as EPNI, and Cassandra Holmes in this appeal as to whether the district court erred in applying the Dahlberg factors rather than the Wadena standard to appellant's motion for a temporary injunction to enjoin respondent city from demolition of the roof depot as part of its Hiawatha expansion project. Now, these parties have been at odds over this project for the better part of 3 years now, as this project places another major industrial source of pollution in a neighborhood already burdened with far more than its share of industrial polluters, road traffic, and highways. The neighborhood's demographic is also...
Sir, can I just clarify before you get going in your oral argument? The only issue you're raising is that the district court erred as a matter of law. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So that is the sole issue that's before us. You have not appealed the findings and determination. I mean, you haven't appealed the specific findings of the court in, with reference to its denial of your motion for a temporary injunction. Am I correct?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. All right. Please proceed.
So the demographics of the East Phillips neighborhood is low income, and a majority of its residents are minorities. And this matter has really become a quintessential environmental justice issue, which has come into prominence in both from the state, federal, and local policies, and as demonstrated in appellant's briefs. This issue has never been addressed by any of the cities nor the court in deliberations in this matter, and that's not in dispute. And significantly, the legislature has addressed this issue in a special law, which has been ignored under Minnesota Statute 11607 Subdivision 4A, which specifically enacted to prevent certain things like this from happening in the East Phillips neighborhood. I'd like to just remind the court that the application of Wadena to the undisputed facts of this matter is subject to de novo review. And
I did have one question, Mr. Ringsred. The statute that you're referring to does not, does the statute you're referring to that you just stated, does that provide any fines or penalties?
No, it doesn't.
Thank you.
And that was, at this point, that was mostly just to illustrate and highlight the impacts that this neighborhood has had to endure in terms of being a super next to a Superfund site and the harms that have been inflicted on it over the centuries, and that this law was passed specifically to address some of these concerns. And so the reason
at this point, there's been no summary conclusion by the district court. This is just a denial of your injunction, right?
Yes.
So you're not foreclosed from continuing with your litigation. And I'm getting at irreparable harm. And I understand that you're worried about the toxins that are coming out. But the suit still goes on, regardless of what this court does. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. And again, when it really comes down to, I don't want to try to stray too far into the Dahlberg facts, because again, but yes, the suit will go on.
Well, the reason I asked that question is because my understanding of reading Wadena is, as it differs from this case, is that there was a summary judgment determination. So I'm kind of reading into your argument that once the arson is released from the soil, that's pretty much as good as done. Is that pretty much what you're arguing?
Well, in the district court, that was one of the irreparable harm, and specifically when it came to the demolition of the roof depot. However, as I mentioned, this
that's all we're talking about. Maybe I read your briefing wrong. I thought that's all we're talking about is the demolition of the roof depot.
Sure, we are. But the question right now is, did the court, we're saying that the Wadena standard should apply in whether or not to grant the injunction rather than the court going through and applying the Dahlberg factors. And so—
Can I ask you this though? I mean, isn't the Wadena case basically, it was an adjudication on the merits, and one of the remedies that was available with a successful adjudication on the merits was a permanent injunction, and the court simply gave that remedy, and this court affirmed that. Isn't that distinguishable from this case where your client is asking for a temporary injunction? There's been no adjudication on the merits, and the court has had to make a finding of whether your client is likely to succeed on the merits as part of the Dahlberg factors. I mean, isn't this clearly distinguishable from Wadena, your situation?
On a superficial level, yes. There hasn't been, I think you can look at the White case where Wadena was citing to, and that was where the court also at the temporary, had a motion for a temporary injunction at the same time as a trial. And as the court has pointed out in this case, the Wadena case, the injunctive motion was heard at the same time as a motion for summary judgment. And that is
okay,
essentially—
Back to the summary judgment motion then. You know, in your brief was very well done, but your brief indicates that there relies on undisputed facts, but there are disputed facts. So that's an overstatement, a generalization in your brief. Would you at least concede that?
I guess it's hard.
I mean, you're not ready for summary judgment. I mean, do you want the court to make summary judgment now?
I don't know why
you didn't ask for that if there's undisputed facts.
And that very well may have, should be the case. But the real question right now in front of this court, because the court's holding essentially is saying, one, that Wadena does not overrule the Drabik case. And the Drabik is the case that was issued 2 years before the Wadena case. And then saying that the Drabik case is binding precedent, meaning that is as applied to MIRA and MIPA. Well, actually, just in that case, applying to MIRA, they applied the Dahlberg factors. However, the issue with that, and to get to the issues of undisputed facts, really boils down to the fact that Wadena could apply under MIRA and MIPA. The district court's opinion basically says that is impossible. According to his interpretation of Drabik, that would be impossible. And so to the point of the undisputed facts, and the similarities between Wadena and this case are much closer in the sense that it comes down to sort of the standard of evidence at a certain stage of litigation. At both this stage, I guess you could almost call this at the motion to dismiss on the pleading stage or the summary judgment phase, the only thing that the court can make rulings on are undisputed facts. And that is what we are saying we have here. There are undisputed facts that are trigger violations under MIPA. And so therefore, if there are, which would serve as the prerequisites that are required under the Wadena standard. And so whether a case has to go to a motion for summary judgment, it's possible, but there are at this stage undisputed facts. We are alleging there are undisputed facts. Plus, the real issue here is that if there were undisputed facts,
What are the undisputed facts?
The several undisputed facts are the there are the city never considered alternatives. There's environmental justice issues. And under MIRA, subdivision 116B04A, which the district court completely ignored. Under that cause of action, we can show, if we can show a violation has occurred or is likely to occur to a statute, a standard, a rule, or whatever it is, that is a statutory violation. And one of those—
That doesn't sound like undisputed facts. That sounds like allegations to me.
Well, one of them is the fact that even in the city's, the city themselves doing the studies under the roof depot site of the arsenic, that exceeds an MPCA standard for arsenic in the soil. That right there is an undisputed fact. And that triggers the violation under MIRA 116B04 subdivision A, which I had just mentioned. And so there are several undisputed facts that would allow the district court to do this. But oh, again,
Mr. Ringsred, and then I'll lay off. does the distinction between application of Dahlberg and Wadena, in your opinion, does that merit, I keep wanting to say publication, that's not our word now, it's a precedential opinion. And if so, what would you suggest as a syllabus point?
I believe this is a case of first impression. And I think it is, in terms of environmental litigation, could be very, very important for plaintiffs and people trying to bring causes of claims under these acts, because in the majority of cases in environmental litigation, an injunction is really the only remedy available to a plaintiff to stop potential harm from occurring. And so the nexus here really is if the district, because the district court's holding is that the Wadena factors could never apply under MIRA and MEPA claims, because as it says, the Drabik case is controlling. And in Drabik, they use the 5 Dahlberg factors, but which again is, they just happen to use those factors, which happened 2 years before the Wadena case. So they didn't even have Wadena to apply in this matter. And as we point out in our briefing, the Drabik case does not in any way address the question of whether Wadena or whether the Dahlberg factors should apply. And very clearly in our brief, we show that does not, the Drabik case is not precedential or controlling in this situation because it wasn't addressing this specific question we're here to consider today.
Mr. Ringsred, on page 29 of a respondent's brief, if we decide that the Wadena standard case doesn't apply here, then we don't even have to discuss whether the district court got the Dahlberg factors right. I mean, because that's all you're arguing, is that the Wadena standard should apply. So if we say it doesn't, that's the end of the case, correct?
Well, that's the end of this issue in terms of the injunction. Because again, this is
is it the end of this case, this appeal?
This appeal, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any, there's also an allegation made in the respondent's brief that you haven't cited any case that applies the Wadena statutory factors to a MEPA or MIRA claim. Is that correct? So this is a, is it your claim that this is a matter of first impression?
Yes. And yes, it would come down to the policies and looking at the purpose of Wadena. And then the elements in Wadena, as I mentioned, it's in Wadena, yes, they brought the injunctive motion along with a summary judgment motion. But even at a summary judgment motion, all they are able to do is apply undisputed facts to the law. And that is the same thing that can happen here, that can happen in MIRA and MEPA. And so the court's holding just needs to be reversed, saying that Wadena could apply. I don't even know if this court needs to go as far as saying that these statutory violations occurred, because the district court's opinion is essentially saying Wadena never applies because Drabik applied the Dahlberg factors, and that is binding precedent. And so If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve my 50 seconds for rebuttal.
Well, you'll actually have 5 minutes, Mr. Ringthread. So
5 minutes
if you want to keep
seconds.
Arguing, well, you know, you don't get to add the 50 seconds to the 5 minutes. So If you're finished with your first argument, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you'd like to keep, you know, use another 50 seconds, that's also fine with us.
If there are no further questions, I'll just reserve the rest for a rebuttal.
Thank you. We'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Mark Enslin, and I'm here on behalf of a respondent, the City of Minneapolis. I want to start with just a few background points. One is that we are here on a very limited basis, which has been confirmed. So this was only a motion as it relates to demo of the Roof Depot warehouse. That's a warehouse that is on property that the city has undisputedly owned for 7 years. And we're just limited to the question here of whether to apply Wadena or the Dahlberg drawback factors. As I think Your Honor noted, if the court decides that Dahlberg applies, we're done and the court need go no further. So I guess I will start with that issue. It's been thoroughly briefed and we believe that Judge Wall reached the correct decision in applying the Dahlberg factors. Wadena is 30 years old. It has never been applied to a MEPA or MIRA case. We're also not aware of any federal cases that have applied any sort of similar statutory analysis to NEPA cases under the National Environmental Protection Act. All federal cases that we're aware of also apply equitable type factors to the analysis of whether to give an injunction or not. I really think this case is a prime example of why the court should apply the equitable factors. What EPNI is arguing on appeal here is that some extraordinarily nuanced violations of MEPA or MIRA, no matter how disconnected they are to the action at issue, which here is demo of a warehouse that the city owns, or how disconnected to any harm that they might suffer as a result of the actual action, that any nuanced violation, whether it's of MEPA or MIRA or some other statute that must be read in coordination with MEPA and MIRA or some concept of environmental justice, any type of violation immediately, even prior to summary judgment, would justify the court in granting, I guess, a per se injunction. And
so, Mr. Enslin, if even if we decided that, you know, Wadena applies, this would have to go back for the district court to determine, if the Wadena statute has been met by undisputed facts. Would that be a fair statement, Mr. Enslin?
I believe that's a fair statement, yeah. Okay. But Wadena doesn't apply. I mean, it is just a completely different case. And this is an example of why we don't want to apply it, because any technical nuanced violation, no matter what, would result in an injunction. And that would go against virtually everything that this court has ever said about temporary injunctive relief. It is supposed to be
Mr. Enslin, you don't believe then that there should be any precedential opinion issued in this case. You're saying that it's just how it's been. The law is the law.
That would be my opinion, Your Honor. Yeah, I don't see this as a case that needs to set new precedent. I think the court has applied the Dahlberg factors to MEPA and MIRA cases in the past. The court has applied the Dahlberg the factors, obviously, in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases under similar circumstances. And this would be just another case in that line. And I think that's what Judge Wall found.
Can I ask you this question? I'm looking at the Wadena case and it indicates that the trial court can grant injunctive relief without evaluating specific factors. and does say, and I'll just quote, on the other hand, where injunctive relief is explicitly authorized by statute, as it is here under MnStat section 325E0.065, proper exercise of discretion requires the issuance of an injunction if the prerequisites for the remedy have been demonstrated and the injunction would fulfill the legislative purposes behind the state's enactment. Now, counsel has claimed on behalf of the appellant that they met that. They met that criteria. How do you respond to that?
Well, two things. And I think one is, I don't believe substantively they've come close. So again, that would involve the undisputed application of facts to the statute. And there are no undisputed facts in this case. Absolutely, the city will not agree to that. One of the undisputed facts was the city never considered alternatives. The city disputes that. There's evidence in the record that says we did consider alternatives and that this site, there was no other site in the city that presents these opportunities for these efficiencies to be gained. And that as it relates specifically to the Roof Depot warehouse, that we considered whether we could save the warehouse and incorporate it into the city's plans for a new water maintenance facility, and that we could not do it. So the city absolutely disputes that fact. So as to the sort of second part of this, no, we dispute that there are undisputed facts here and they haven't met that standard. As sort of the first part of that question, we also dispute that they have shown any breach of the statute. So we don't believe there has been a breach of the statute. And also, the environmental statutes that they're citing to are completely different than the statute that was at issue in Wadena. The Wadena statute, which relates to the Minnesota Agricultural Equipment Dealers Act, is a very specific statute. It's one of those statutes that has like 10 provisions, and it basically lays out what needs to be in an agricultural equipment dealer's contract. So it basically lays out the provisions. You have to have these certain provisions. And then it says, look, if you don't have these provisions or you breach these provisions, you can get an injunction. And so when you have, as Judge Wall kind of pointed out, you have that level of specificity where you can have a very, you know, there's a contract provision that is missing or a clearly a contract provision that at the summary judgment stage is shown by a preponderance of the evidence to have been breached, that may be a limited circumstance when you depart from the Dahlberg factors, which take into account a more equitable look. And also, they focus on irreparable harm, which is that should be the bedrock of when extraordinary, temporary relief is granted. And that's just not the case here. Again, the statutes that EPNI is suggesting that the city has breached are so much broader. They don't have any of those specific provisions. And that's why you get the arguments from EPNI that you do, which are pretty nuanced as far as how the city has allegedly breached the statute. If you go back to what was really at issue in the hearing before Judge Wall, when they brought their motion, EPNI focused almost entirely on the argument that the city could not safely demo the Roof Depot building. That was their argument. Their argument was you're gonna demo the building, arsenic in the soil is gonna get whipped up, it's gonna go out in the community, the community is gonna get harmed because they'll get sick or they'll get cancer or they'll get exposed. And Judge Wall gave plaintiffs all the opportunity in the world to bring forth evidence to support that argument, gave them extra time on the reply. And the city brought forth its evidence on that issue. And it was an extraordinary amount of evidence because the city has been working since before we purchased the property with experts and outside consultants to make sure that we can do this safely. As I said to Judge Wall, the city would never demo this building if we didn't believe we could do it safely, if our experts and outside consultants didn't tell us we could do it safely, if the MPCA and other state regulators didn't confirm we could do it safely. And so we brought forth that evidence for Judge Wall are experts who are just extraordinary experts at doing this type of work and have specific experience in this neighborhood, which is extraordinary in my experience. And they opined, they looked, said, look, if you follow the protocols, these very detailed protocols that we put forth, you can do this safely. And they talked about all the city has done in 7 years to try and make sure that we could do this safely. And Judge Wall ultimately determined that the plaintiffs hadn't met their burden. And he made pretty detailed findings that plaintiffs did not show a likelihood of success on the merits because they were not able to show the city couldn't demo this safely. So again, spinning back to Your Honor's point, I mean, Wadena and this case are just so completely different. The statute at issue in Wadena is so completely different that there just isn't, it doesn't make sense to apply it in this case. And we don't believe that plaintiffs have met their burden to establish it applies, or obviously to meet the underlying factual allegations to show that the statute has been breached. Again, we lay this out in our brief. Wadena is simply different, decided at a different stage, has been pointed out, summary judgment. It's never been applied to MEPA or MIRA. Same in the federal context. The federal courts, when they're looking at environmental claims, apply very similar equitable factors to the Dahlberg factors. You know, just briefly, I have a few minutes left. I do want to touch on environmental justice just briefly. In order to understand environmental justice, there has to be some context that's put to what we're talking about. This project here is a water maintenance facility. Its sole purpose is to bring clean water to the city and residents around the city and surrounding communities who rely on the city for clean water. It's not a mixed purpose. There's not part public, not part private. It's not part public and part commercial. The only purpose of this is to bring clean water to the city. That's environmental justice. The current property it's on has an abandoned warehouse and blacktop. That's it. That's what's on the property. The project undisputably will add green space. So after this project, there will be significantly more green space. The project will make the property more environmentally safe. There is pollution on the property that predates the city's ownership. The city didn't have anything to do with it. The city will make that property safe. And we're going to give 3 acres dedicated specifically to the community. Those are environmental justice points. Adding green space, making the property more environmentally safe, and giving part of the property directly to the community. And then the third environmental justice point is there's already been thorough environmental review. The city completed an environmental assessment worksheet, very detailed, determined that the project does not have the potential to materially impact the environment. That was a good faith and thorough process. And EPNI did not like the process. They appealed it to this court, and this court affirmed that the city had done things right. That's environmental justice. The Court of Appeals, this court said, the city took a hard look at the issues that EPNI raised and that we didn't act arbitrarily and capricious, that we acted fairly. We took a hard look I think what the court said is we had done such a thorough EAW that the court had never overturned an EAW as thorough as the one that the city had done. That's environmental justice. And again, all the work that the city did to make sure, again, bringing it back to this motion, that the Roof Depot warehouse can be demoed safely. All of the work we did for 7 years, which we've put in the records, just a sum of it. That's environmental justice. We did that so we could do this safely. I'm happy to answer any more questions. Otherwise, I'll give up the rest of my time.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, for the respondents, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd first just like to kind of address the final thing respondents addressed about how green and environmentally friendly this project is going to be by citing to clean water and green space, and that they're actually going to be making the site much more environmentally friendly. What he fails to mention is there's also going to be a giant diesel fueling station at this site where all sorts of diesel equipment will be going in and out and causing further particulate pollution to a neighborhood that is already overburdened by this. Then they talked about the thorough EAW analysis, again, beyond the scope of this, but I'd like to quote one thing where the entire point of that analysis in terms of the community's perspective was for cumulative potential impacts. And in that case, what they literally said is the EAW did not completely fail to address it. That that does not raise to the level of a thorough analysis. But back to the issue at hand, the respondent kept saying that these are nuanced claims and nuanced violations, and that's just not the case. No, they have never addressed these main issues that this case is about the alternatives, environmental justice. There are required considerations even under Minnesota Statute 116D04, Subdivision 7, regardless of whether a municipality does an EAW or an EIS, they are required to take into account considerations that even if you don't do one of those environmental review processes. As I mentioned before, this really boils down to undisputed facts. The city and respondent and the district court seem to be of the position that the only way Wadena, this narrow interpretation implies that the statute authorizing an injunction must also indicate the specific statutory violations that must be found to have occurred in order for these prerequisites as contemplated under Wadena and its progeny to take effect. And this narrow interpretation is just not correct. It's about the discretion of the district court. When the legislature specifically enacts remedies and specifies injunctive relief, and when there are undisputed facts that show violations, that takes away the discretion from the district court. And we have shown, if you look in the district court, in a plaintiff's memorandum of support of its motion, Edward Natter's affidavit states, quote, "The arsenic present around the site ranges in concentrations and in some places is already more than four times greater than the MPCA screening soil leaching value for residential areas." And under MIRA 116B04A, it forbids conduct, and I quote, "conduct of the defendant which violates or is likely to violate an environmental quality standard, limitation, rule, order, license, stipulation, agreement, or permit." That is so in
on that note, has the in the length of this property being there, has the MPCA or any state agency fined the city for being in violation of any of the laws you're talking about?
No, this
so that's, I mean, that's where I'm sort of, I mean, I think there's an argument that Wadena would apply because as Mr. Enslin pointed out, you know, it was easy to look in the contract in Wadena and, you know, well, either, you know, this contract has one of these 10 provisions or it doesn't. You know, your argument for the statutory violations that kick Wadena in, I think would have some validity if it's clear, you know, based on a finding that has not been appealed, that, you know, the statute's been violated and they've been fined for violating that statute. But since we don't have that, I'm just at a loss to see how you can get to the hurdle of Wadena applying. Now, why don't you tell me, Mr. Ringsard, why I'm wrong and take as much time as you want?
Sure. So in some of these, again, I want to go back quickly. Some of these aspects of this about whether something is violated are questions better suited for a remand to the district court. But with respect to this, that gets me back to the specificity does the statute, and in this case, I believe it's once in MIRA, it is 116B01. Oh, no, sorry, that's the legislative purpose. The statutes in both of these cases, which specify injunctive relief for violations, does that relief section of that act, does it have to specifically have the violations that, if found, would trigger that, would trigger Wadena's standard in this case? But another, so we're getting very focused in on some of the violations that may or may not have occurred. But another good example is the commencements of a project prior to environmental review. This is one that is undisputed. I mean, it's undisputed that the respondent has spent millions of dollars prior to conducting environmental review of this project. And so there are a number of what—
And correct me if I'm wrong, which we said they don't have to do. I mean, am I wrong on that? I thought we said they didn't have to do one. I mean, if they had to do one and they didn't do one, I get it. That would be a violation of a statute. And maybe you can sort of bootstrap Wadena in. But if we're saying they didn't have to do one, then I don't see how you get there.
They eventually did environmental review, but before they did environmental review—
Right, of their own choice. But that's not a violation of a statute. That's, you know, and I'm sure Mr. Ensland would say this, you know, they went the extra mile. Whether they did or not, they weren't required to do it. So I fail to see how we get to the statutory violation to kick Wadena in if the record doesn't indicate there has been one.
For the respect of this court's time, I would like to point the court to Allen v. City of Mendota Heights. That case very specifically addresses the issues that we're discussing here, how under MIPA requires a process to occur before the city acts on written requests, and really speaks to the issue of the damage that occurs when commencement of a project happens before environmental review occurs. Regardless of what they eventually did do in EAW, and to say it is voluntary is also very misleading, because it only occurred after the citizens of this neighborhood petitioned the EQB to require such a review process. And coincidentally, they only agreed to on the day that this case was initially filed in the district court back in, I believe, 2021 or even 2020. So to answer your question, I would point you to Allen, the Allen case that I cited, because that is quite dead on with respect to what you're asking.
Thank you. Thank you. We express our gratitude to counsel for the appellant, counsel for the respondent. We will be issuing our decision within 90 days. That being the last matter for oral argument, we are adjourned.